You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there, Duke fans, and welcome to episode number 617 of the Duke Basketball Roundup. We are one day away from the Sweet 16 matchup against the Houston Cougars. We are going to preview again the Houston Cougars, but this time it's just me and Jason. I am Donald Wine. I'm your host for this episode. I have Jason Evans with me. Both of us right now, our computers are fixed. And by both of us, I mean me. Jason was fine the whole time in the last episode. I apologize for the technical difficulties. Hopefully we have them fixed on this one, Jason.
Yeah, because we got a lot to talk about. This Houston Cougars team, Donald, I did a little deep dive. I've watched a bunch of tape on them and the such. Tape, YouTube videos, highlight video, you know, the same thing. I've been looking at the KenPom page on them. The KenPom page on this Houston team is scary. That's all
yes.
I'm going to say. It is scary to look at. This is a really, really good team.
Jason, one thing that always everyone likes when you're a basketball player, football player, they always say you want to get good tape. You want to have good tape, and you want to make sure when someone looks at what you do on the floor or on the field that they come away with a good impression. Jason, I have a great impression of the Houston Cougars. They have some great tape out there. Let's get into the records part of things. They are 32-4 on the year, 15-3 they finished in the regular season in the Big 12. Jason, they started out the season 14-0, and even then, as we mentioned when we had Jeremy Branham on yesterday, we had this situation where Houston came in to a new conference with some old reputation of being really good, being a strong team, and the question was going to be, how were they going to figure out the Big 12? Well, they figured it out. They start out the season 14-0. Again, they went 15-3 in the Big 12. They won the regular season by 3 games. And they got to the Big 12 tournament final where they eventually lost to Iowa State. When you look at everything else that they have, Jason, as you mentioned, you look at the KenPom page, number 2 in KenPom, number 1 in the net, 16-4 with quality quad one wins. Jason, if I'm not going to list the top 100 KenPom wins because they have too many. They have 20 of them. 20 top 100 KenPom wins.
Come on, man.
Ugh. And the only team that apparently has figured them out is Iowa State, because Iowa State is the only team to have defeated them twice. They defeated them once during the regular season and again in the Big 12 tournament final. And as Jeremy mentioned in the last show, it was a tale of very poor shooting from two teams who were excellent with defense. So you kind of expected a low number. I mentioned that Iowa State was one of the teams to really have their number. And when you look at how many points that Houston scores, they score quite a few points, considering the fact that, as we talk about, they really have a really slow tempo. But against Iowa State, they scored 41 points in the Big 12 final. And in the regular season, in a loss, they scored 53 points. Those are the two lowest outputs they've had all year. And they only have one other time scoring under 60 points, and that was a regular season win against Texas Tech. So when you look at Houston, you look at a team that, while they may be slow and methodical about their business, they get their business done in a very big way. And when you look at them in the eye test, the word toughness, relentless, playing hard, just absolutely all of that encompasses what Houston does. And for, again, I can't understate this enough. To come into the Big 12 and dominate the way they did in their first season in the conference shows that this roster is built for any game. And I think that's what makes this game, Jason, a little bit extra special. I think it's amazing that we are at this point. We've talked about how Duke has gotten to this point and how well we've played in the NCAA tournament so far. But this is a test. This is a net test. Make no mistake about it. This is the test that everybody circled on their bracket, most likely, and it's here. So we have to be ready for him, because I will say this, watching all the teams in college basketball, Jason, this year, no team plays harder and more relentless, more consistently than Houston has all year.
Yeah. Look, reflecting on their record just for a moment, I mean, to put up the record that they did in the Big 12, which not only was the number one, that was far and away the number one conference.
Mm-hmm.
Just a league that is stacked with tough team after tough team. Houston was winning games on the road routinely against top 30, top 40 teams, just left and right. It is so, so impressive what they did. And the result of all of that is, as you said, the number two team in KenPom. By the way, they've been number one all year long. But they you mentioned they lost to Iowa State in the Big 12 tourney. They got blown out in that game. And then they just had a game against Texas A&M in the round of 32. Wasn't that great. Went to overtime, fairly close contest. And as a result of those two games and the fact that UConn has been beating the ever-loving snot out of people,
mm-hmm,
recently, UConn has vaulted up to the number one spot in the KenPom rankings. But this Houston team has basically been at the top of college basketball this entire season. And it is built around defense. Defense, defense, defense is the story. And I'm going to give you, this is not a new thing for the Houston Cougars. Here's the past 7 years of Houston's defense, according to KenPom's defensive rankings. And see if you notice a little trend here. In 2018, they were 13th. 2019, they were 11. 2020, dropped back a little bit. They fell down to 21. But then in 2021, they were 9th. 2022, they were 8th. 2023, they were 5th. And this year, they're the number two defensive team in all of college basketball. Can you see a trend there? A little downhill slope?
The stock going up. The stocks are going up in the defense every single year.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't get much higher than number two. There's only one slot left to go to. And they were number one in defense much of this year. Iowa State's passed them fairly recently. But, I mean, this is a really, really impressive team on defense. And usually when I talk about the stuff a team does, I talk about what they do well, and then they go, oh, you know, they also have some stuff that they do poorly. And when I say that Houston is good at just about everything, I mean, they are good at just about everything. And by the way, usually I'm like, oh, a team's good at something because they're top 40 or something like that, or maybe top 20. I'm here to tell you that Houston's not just good, but elite at all these things. Like, they're number two, the second best effective field goal percentage team on defense in the entire country, because they only allow teams to hit 30% from three and 43% from two. Those are ridiculous numbers. They're the third best team in the country at turnover percentage. They get turnovers on almost a quarter of all possessions. Think about that. One out of every four times you bring the ball into the front court, Houston ends up taking it from you and running the other direction. That's terrifying.
that's the scariest stat that I have seen this year on KenPom. Like, the fact that 25% of all possessions end with you getting the ball taken away from you, that is a major problem that Duke has to be ready for, right? They have to take care of the basketball. They did against James Madison, right? We talked about how well they took care of the basketball against JMU. They have to be even better against Houston, because Houston's going to find ways to try and take the ball away from you.
Yeah, so you won't be surprised when you hear those turnovers numbers to know that they're the number two team in the country at steal percentage. By the way, if you don't turn it over, Don't think you're going to have an easy time getting that shot off because they're number two in block percentage. Second best block percentage team in the country, even though this is not a Houston team that has like a 7 foot or 7'1" guy with really long arms. They're getting blocks from like every position on the floor from guys who are like 6'7" with long arms. That is scary. They block more than 16% of field goal attempts. Come on. And get this, they're even good at free throw defense. How's that possible? Their opponents only hit 67.5% from the free throw line. That's probably because everybody's so shell-shocked from the physical defense they had to endure to even get to that free throw line.
I was going to say, Jason, the one thing that, you know, is very hard when you're shooting free throws is when you're tired. And people get tired very quickly against Houston because of the, again, how relentless they are. They, I mean, would you have to deal with that? The fact that you even get a moment to catch a breath at the free throw line before you take a shot. Most people just aren't ready for that because of how inundated they have been by the physicality that Houston brings.
Yeah, so we've done nothing here but tell you about terrifying things to maybe be afraid of on Houston defense. There are slivers of hope, so to speak. One of them is this: Houston fouls. Houston fouls a lot. They are 322nd in the country at free throw rate. Like, when you get the ball into the front court against them, if you don't turn it over and don't get your shot blocked, you're pretty darn likely to get fouled. Now, part of that may be that they're getting so many turnovers that teams don't get a lot of field goals against them, so your free throw rate is sort of higher as a result. But the reality is Houston does foul a lot. They put teams at the free throw line a tremendous amount. And then the other weird thing about them is we heard from Jeremy Branham, the voice of Houston basketball, that they stress rebounding a lot. They're not a good defensive rebounding team. They allow opponents to grab almost 31% of their missed shots. That makes Houston one of the bottom 100 teams in all of college basketball at defensive rebounding. Texas A&M, in the round of 32, Texas A&M grabbed an absurd 26 offensive rebounds. That's a crazy number.
That's ridiculous.
I don't think I've ever seen a number that high. 26 offensive rebounds. They grabbed more than 50% of their missed shots. When Texas A&M missed, there was a better chance they were going to get it than Houston was going to get it. It's frankly the only reason Texas A&M was in that game. And then the last thing I want to say about the Houston defense, this is a really weird one. It's not necessarily good or bad, but it just tells you a little something about the way they play defense. Houston is 350th in the country in assist percentage. We've talked so much. Donald, you and I can't believe how much we've talked about assist percentage lately and how important it is for Duke to be passing the ball well, to not be going one-on-one. Well, Houston is a team that does not let you go one-on-one. They don't want you to go one-on-one. They are so physical with their defense that teams need to pass the ball to get it to where they want. And Houston apparently doesn't mind that. Again, 350th in assist percentage. You get assists on almost 60% of baskets against Houston. When Duke is playing well on offense, they're passing the ball. Houston is not going to necessarily get in your way when you're passing the ball. I think it's a really interesting aspect of them.
This is going to be an intriguing comparison, right? When you see that on the floor, a team that likes to pass the ball to get shots, a team that has been very good and do at doing that all year. Like we've mentioned, I think we've only lost one game all year where we have an assist percentage or assist rate above 50%. But then you converse that with how poorly Houston is at allowing teams to pass the ball on them. But it also feels like a strength for them because that's part of how they play defense. So it's interesting. That's going to be a very interesting battle because, yeah, sure, we're going to get our shots. We're going to get our open looks because they're going to allow us to pass the ball. But that's almost playing into their strength in a way. So it's going to be a very interesting way how they match up with that.
All right, let's get to the offense really quick. Not nearly as interesting and not quite as scary, although Houston is the number 14 offensive team in the country. Like, oh, number 14, we're not as afraid of that. It's because the defense is so terrifying with them. There are two things on offense that Houston does really, really well. Number one is they don't turn the ball over. They don't turn the ball over at all. Ninth best in the country in turnover percentage. And remember how I said they were terrible at defensive rebounding? 350th in defensive rebounding? Or, sorry, not 350th. They were like
322nd.
Yeah, yeah. They're poor at defensive rebounding. Well, they are great at offensive rebounding. Like, Houston doesn't actually shoot all that great, but man, I'm telling you, they get those offensive rebounds. They grab almost 37% of their missed shots, 11th best offensive rebounding rate in all of college basketball. As I mentioned, they're just sort of an average shooting team. They hit about 35% of their threes, which is fine, you know, but it's not like doesn't leap off the page. They hit less than 50% of their two-point shots. They're fairly poor from the free throw line, a little bit less than 70% of their free throws. You know, again, none of these are places where you go, oh, they're terrible. Oh, let them have open shots or anything like that. I mean, and they've got guys. They, you know, they got LJ Cryer. They've got some guys who can drain from three. But this is not a team that's likely to just rain points down on you. They're a team that's likely to defeat you because their defense is making life so difficult for you. And it's worth noting, we sort of already talked about this, but I just want to point it out officially. They're like Virginia, super slow. Games against Houston, you know, first one to 60, first one to 70, maybe, because they're among the bottom 20 teams, 20 slowest teams on both offense and defense in terms of pace. Houston's just a team where it's a really, really slow game. And then the last sort of statistical thing I wanted to note about them, they're not tall. This Houston team in Ken Pomeroy's height metric is 345th in the country in height. Duke will be taller, often several inches taller at every single spot on the floor. Houston's starting lineup goes 6'1", 6'1", 6'3", 6'7", 6'8". They're in a single player on their roster right now who's over 6'9". And it's not like, you know, sometimes you play a team like that and they have a bunch of guys who are like 6'6", 6'7", 6'8". No, this Houston team, they got a lot of smaller guys, but they are old. They are physically strong. Of their top seven guys, five of them are fourth or fifth year seniors. These guys are sculpted. You can see their bodies. And the other two of their top seven guys are a sophomore and a junior. They're not, there's like one freshman big man who plays a little bit. I'm not sure he's going to play all that much against Duke. This is an old team. It's a physically strong team. And they make up for not being tall by being long and just being savvy.
Jason, I want to go back to the tempo for a second because I want to again provide some statistics on how slow they've played this year. How slow is their tempo, Jason? They only have five games this year where they have more than 70 possessions. Three of them were games that went to overtime. There was only one game that ended in regulation where they had more than 70. Converse that with Duke, where we've had nine games of 70-plus possessions, and none of them went to OT. Most of their games have possession counts between 60 and 64, which means that as great as Duke has been, as efficient as we have been at times during the year, we have to be the most efficient Duke team we've seen this year against Houston because we're just not going to get the possessions. If we think back to that Virginia game, how well we played against Virginia, despite the fact that Virginia limited us to what was like maybe 63 or 64 possessions. We were clinical at destroying them because we were able to make shots and we were able to take the ball, basically take the ball the other way on defense, got a few steals, but really it was about Virginia missing shots and we were getting rebounds and going the other way. The rebounding battle, as you mentioned, a very interesting battle where, you know, this team is very good at offensive rebounding, but borderline terrible at defensive rebounding. How does Duke compare to that? Duke has to be there with the footwork on when you're rebounding, both on offense and defense. Because once you have the footwork down, once you have the location and the placement and the technique down, that's where the height, as you mentioned, that they don't have can be an advantage to Duke. Because you can't go up over them without fouling. You can't go around us without fouling. If you're in the right spots, if you're boxing out your man and doing it well with great footwork. So this is, again, is going to be emphasis. I thought, again, we did very well against JMU with this, and this is something that needs to continue. But we're like, especially our big men, if we're able to get in front of guys, that's going to be a big deal. But Jason, I think the one thing that we have done well all season that I think is going to be crucial is that our guards have been rebounding the ball very well, right? Jeremy Cain has had several games where he's had double-digit rebounds. Tyrese Proctor, Jeremy Roach. And Jeremy Roach hasn't done it as much, obviously, because he's a little bit smaller. But Tyrese Proctor has had games where he's had 6, 7, 8 rebounds. Jeremy Cain has had double-digit rebounds in some games. That's going to need to continue against Houston.
Hey, one last really quick thing I want to mention about them in terms of their style of play. We've talked a lot about the fact that they commit a pretty fair number of fouls. And interestingly enough, for a team that fouls a lot and a team that is not as deep, I think they have three different big men who played earlier in the year who are all injured and not playing at this stage of the season. So they are not, Houston is not, they're really probably going to go 7 or 8 deep at the most in this game. For a team that's not very deep and a team that commits a lot of fouls, they do not, when a guy picks up two fouls, he sits. Kelvin Sampson says, okay, if you got two fouls in the first half, he says, you're done. This is one of the bottom 50 teams in the country in terms of how much they allow a guy with two fouls to participate in the game, to continue to play. It is very rare. I think probably, you know, like maybe a Jamal Shedd, who or maybe an LJ Cryer, who are both really, really experienced guys and sort of, you know how to control things. Maybe one of those guys, if they got two fouls, might continue playing. But for the most part, if you get Houston in a little bit of foul trouble, Kelvin Sampson will sit those guys down, and then he starts to go to a bench that is not as experienced, that is not as quality as his starters, and that could be a place where Duke gets an advantage.
And that's what happened against A&M and why A&M was able to take them to the brink in the second round. Jason, let's talk about the players, but first let's take a quick break. We're going to talk more about Houston right after this. This episode of the Duke Basketball Roundup is brought to you by BetterHelp. Hey, this is Donald Wine of the Duke Basketball Roundup. And Jason, springtime is a season that's supposed to feel like a new beginning. We have better weather, and it feels like everyone's got an extra bounce in their step as we leave winter in rearview. However, for many, the changing of seasons doesn't always mean that their mood lightens up with the extra sunlight. It can be easy to ignore our social battery being on E and spread ourselves thin without the opportunity to recharge.
Boy, you know it, Donald. You're right. With the amount of social gatherings picking up, with the improving weather and more daylight, there's more pressure to be on when you're interacting with family, friends, coworkers, heck, even strangers. And let's be honest, it can take a lot out of you. And before you know it, you don't have enough energy for the important things and people in your life. And for some, getting advice from a therapist can help you rebuild your social life without completely draining your social battery. That is what BetterHelp is all about. It is entirely online, and it's designed to be therapy that's convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched up to a professional, licensed therapist. And you can switch therapists anytime you want.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try and find your social sweet spot. Visit BetterHelp.com/DukeRoundup today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DukeRoundup. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. All right, we are back, and we are still talking the Houston Cougars, and we're switching now to the individual players on the Houston Cougars. And as we've mentioned throughout this show, that this team is strong. They're strong in many, many, many facets of the game, and each individual player brings something quality to the table. And Jason, I'm going to lead you with this. I know you want to talk about a couple of players, but with this team, this is a Houston team that has had a lot of minutes continuity, right? 45.7% of their minutes have come from the same people that they've had last year. And where they got even better is just adding a couple of guys that kind of fit the Kelvin Sampson mode, but also come from programs that are traditionally very tough. LJ Cryer, transfer from Baylor. Malik Wilson, a transfer from Texas Tech. You have Damian Dunn, a transfer from Temple. Like, you have guys that are coming from programs that are tough-nosed, grinded-out type of programs, and they are the final pieces to this puzzle of this Houston Cougars team that is very, very scary. So let's talk about some of these players. I know you want to start with LJ Cryer, who is a transfer, but talk about him and Shedd in the backcourt.
Yeah, actually, the guy I wanted to start with really is Jamal Shedd, whose job it is to cut the head off the snake. And that is the Houston defense begins with Jamal Shedd hounding the opposing point guard and making their life miserable. Tyrese Proctor, I feel for you, brother. This is not going to be a fun week or a fun Friday night, I should say. It probably hasn't been a fun week because Tyrese Proctor, I'm sure, has been working his butt off in practice. But what Jamal Shedd does to opposing point guards is a little bit terrifying. He is arguably the best perimeter defender in all of college basketball. He averages more than 2.2 steals per game. He will have his hands and his body all over you the whole time, daring the referees to call fouls on him. He has a great reputation as a defender, so they don't really want to call fouls on him. His motor never stops. I mean, never. We talked about it. We watched some tape. I watched some Houston highlights. I was watching some stuff of him, and like, he'd get beat, and then suddenly he is busting his butt to get back in the play. He tips the ball away. Like, he's almost more dangerous when you beat him because he's going to come back on you. I mean,
you can't see him, right? Like, he comes from behind. You can't see him.
Yeah. You think you've beaten him, and then suddenly he's back in the play, just causing havoc. This is going to seem a little weird. He kind of reminds me a bit of Jalen Blakes. He is relentless. He knows where to go on the floor. He has incredible instincts, except he's doing what Jaylen Blake's does for 2 or 3 minutes for 30 plus minutes game. And he's a way, way, way better offensive player than Jaylen Blake's is. Look, he's not a great shooter, but he will get to the bucket. Jamal Shedd will. He's a really nice passer, as one of the top five assist rates in all of college basketball. Prototype, defense first, but also really good on offense, point guard. There's a reason Jamal Shedd is in the conversation for all these All-American teams and stuff like that. He is absolutely the guy. If Houston wins this game, I predict we'll be talking about the way Jamal Shedd was able to take, whether it was Proctor or Roach or McCain. I'm not sure which one they're going to put him on, but whoever he's on is not going to have a fun evening.
Not at all. And when you pair him in the backcourt with LJ Cryer, 6'1 senior, again, transfer from Baylor. So he's played Big 12 basketball, clearly brought in to kind of help Houston enter the conference and know, understand what it's like to be in the Big 12. And he's done it in a big way. He led the team 15.5 points per game. He does a little bit of everything, Jason. He does some rebounding, does some assists. He gets his steals. He shoots threes. He's probably their main 3-point shooter, shoots it at almost a 39% clip. And he's lethal when he gets to the free throw line, 87% from the line this year. This is going to be a guy that, again, he's going to try and get his shots. He's going to try and get to the line. And when he does, he's going to beat you from the line because he's going to knock down almost everything. These two guys together might be one of the best backcourts, if not the best backcourt in the country this year. That's how good they've been playing and playing off of each other.
Yeah, well, and the guy that joins them, you know, they play a 3-guard offense. They you mm-hmm. know, Emmanuel Sharp is the third guy there. I mentioned earlier they have a bunch of seniors. Emmanuel Sharp is just a sophomore. He's also an excellent 3-point shooter, 37% from out there. Also an excellent free throw shooter, almost 85% at the free throw line. Really, the way Houston operates is that Cryer and Sharp are the guys standing outside the line, and Jamal Shedd tries to penetrate on you, tries to drive the ball into you, and then feed it out to those two guys. The other thing that they do in their half-court offense, especially Houston, is they run the offense to some extent through Juwan Roberts. He is a lefty power forward. He's about 235 pounds of solid, solid muscle. He is hard to move off of his spot, and he has a really, really tough to defend lefty hook shot. It's just hard to double team him when he gets the ball down there, because he's a really, really good passer. And then if you don't double team him and he's able to get that lefty hook shot, it's, you know, like if you're Mark Mitchell's probably gonna be matched up on him. If you're Mark Mitchell and you're guarding Juwan Roberts, like, you know, I'm not sure what you're able to do to stop that lefty hook shot when he gets that ball down in the post. If he was actually second on their team in assists during Big 12 play. And by the way, he is a relentless rebounder. They may struggle a little bit on defensive rebounding as a team, but Juwan Roberts is the guy who is cleaning up most of his defensive boards. And I just think it's really interesting, the fact that they run so much of the half-court offense through him in the post. By the way, it is also worth noting in terms of how they run their offense. They are a team that loves to run the pick and roll. Mm-hmm. Makes perfect sense. Good ball handlers, guys who can get downhill on you. Beefy but mobile big men. So pick and roll makes perfect sense, but there's something I want you to watch out for. Houston may be the best team in the country at running what's called the ghost screen. And for folks who don't understand what a ghost screen is, it's where it looks like they're about to do a pick and roll. It looks like they're about to set a screen. And then the screener, usually it's a big man, suddenly doesn't set the screen and instead cuts to the basket super fast. He like runs away from the play. And what happens on a ghost screen is, you know, because the defense thinks they're about to see a pick, the defenders sort of adjust their positioning. You know, either they're going to try and fight over it or whatever else it may be. The ghost screen creates space, and it creates space that either allows that guy, the ghost screener, to be open on the cut, or more often than not, what it allows is it allows that guard, the guy who has the ball in his hands, to get just a little tiny advantage on his defender who is preparing for a screen, and then suddenly the screen isn't there and the guy's going the other direction or something like that. Watch for Houston to do that. It's not something a lot of teams do, but Houston runs a ton of ghost screens. And when they do it, it is a dangerous, dangerous thing. As a team, Duke needs to be prepared, because this is a good pick and roll team. who will also trick you into thinking they're pick and rolling, and they're not, and suddenly you're stuck in a bad position.
And watch how we contend with that, because there's been times where we like to hedge, but when you do, you face the guard, you face the guy with the ball. And so when you're doing, you're turning your back away from the basket, which is actually the best thing that Houston would want to do a ghost screen with, because then they're going to come through and then they cut to the basket, Jason, and you're flat footed facing away from the basket. That guy's behind you. You have to turn around. And in that split second, they're already at the rim. That's what they were really good at. And it's going to be interesting to see how Duke handles that, because you're going to have to still be out there. You can't cheat on the ghost screen, because they could then stay outside and put the screen on the defender, and it's still a similar result. So you have to be ready for it, but at the same time, you have to angle your body to be ready for both options and kind of make sure that you have one eye on the ball handler and one eye on the ghost screener, because when he goes, you got to be going with him. Otherwise, it's just like a backdoor pass in the sense, but they're doing it with using the screener as the kind of guy who lures you in before he takes you out. So I think that's interesting there.
Yeah, one of the most important matchups in this game, we've talked about, you know, the other Houston starters. I want to mention the fifth starter, who's Javier Francis. He's really their only big man. And he is foul prone. It is worth noting that Francis, like, he picks up more than 5 fouls per 40 minutes. It is tough for him to stay on the floor because he's picking up so many fouls. And that could be a huge key to the game, because they don't have a lot of depth behind him. But when Javier Francis is on the floor, when he is guarding Kyle Filipowski, because he will be the guy who guards Kyle Filipowski, Francis is only 6'8". Flip's going to have 3-4 inches on him. I got news for you. Flip's not going to have a lot of weight on him. Javier Francis is 240, 245 pounds, and he has long arms. He is 6'8", but Javier Francis has the 15th best block percentage in all of college basketball. This is one of the best shot blockers in the game. And he is going to present real problems for Flip as a result of that. This is not going to be someone that you can out quick. And this is not someone that you're able to move around. And this is a guy with long arms who's going to cause problems for you. We have seen Flip and Mark Mitchell again and again and again get their shot blocked. Javier Francis, it is possible he will have a field day. And I mentioned the fouls that he commits. Donald, my last thing in this preview. You know, I'm not a genius to be the first to be pointing this out. A lot of people have pointed out how this game is called could go a long, long way toward determining who wins this contest. Because if the refs allow Houston to use their body, to use their hands, to be physical, Houston is one of these teams that wants to dare the officials to call a foul on every single play. Their attitude is, I'm going to commit so many fouls, they can only call half of them. And that means on the other half of those possessions, you're not going to have a good possession because I probably fouled you.
Of course. They're from Texas. Texas is, they love their football. They're just holding on every play in football, right? It's just a matter of whether the ref calls it. That's the type of things that they like to do. And this is clearly to clarify, this is not to say that they are a dirty team or play cheap or
It's not
like
cheating.
That.
It's just a style of play.
Far from that. But they're very good at using their body, using their physicality to get over on you. And even if they get the foul, the one thing that, Jason, we talked about earlier in this episode, the one thing that they're going to do is make you tired, which means our bench needs to be ready. Our bench needs to be ready to log some minutes in this game and log productive minutes, because we are going to have to go to our bench a little bit more if it becomes a physical game and they start to wear down our starters.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this. I'm glad we're playing them on Friday, not on Sunday, because I think having the 5 days of not of rest, you know, I don't want to imply that Duke's been sitting around. They're clearly working hard in practice. But having 5 days off and having time to really prepare for the unique challenges that Houston presents, especially defensively, I think is a really good thing for this Duke team. I know the popular opinion is, avoid that number one seed. Avoid that team that is so good you don't want to face them. Maybe someone else knocks them off for you. Yeah, that would have been nice, believe me. I would love to not be facing Houston in this game. But if you have to face them, give me 5 days. Let me prepare for Houston, because I think they are a unique challenge in the way they play defense. And again, like I said, if the refs call this game close, it probably helps Duke, although we got to be careful. If especially Flip, if Kyle Filipowski gets in foul trouble, that could be a real, real problem for Duke.
Jason, as we end this preview, I want to leave you with a couple of things. One, a little bit of history. it could be, if we beat Houston on Friday, it will have been 30 years since we last beat a higher seed in the NCAA tournament. The higher seed meaning a better seed.
Really? Wow. Well,
it, wow, the problem is
we're always like a one or a two. So
we, that's the thing, is this testament in a way to our program, what we've always been the higher seed in a lot of these tournaments and in a lot of these matchups. But we have an opportunity here to be the team that walks into Dallas of all places to play Houston of all teams and defeat them. Hey, we keep talking about a little bit of history. Let's go back to 2010. Elite Eight in Houston. We ended up playing Baylor, a very strong Baylor team, a team that a lot of people said, oh, this is a problem that Duke is having to play Baylor basically a few hours away from home. And we ended up beating them to go to the Final Four and, of course, win that national championship. If we want to have a national championship, obviously we have to beat Houston. But I think this is a statement game for Duke in a sense, one that we don't have a lot of opportunities to do. We don't really have a lot of opportunities in the course of a season to make a statement, because we are Duke and everyone wants to make a statement against us. This is one where we can go out against a team that is one of the best in college basketball, has been one of the most consistent, scariest teams all year long, and go in and beat them in Dallas, again, a few hours from home, and make them take the bus ride back down I-45. This can happen. We have this opportunity to do so. And Jason, again, as I kind of alluded to when we spoke with Jeremy on the last episode, maybe sometimes you have to look to the gods and say that curses are real. And of course, I mentioned the Drake curse. They gave Drake a custom jersey before the tournament. Jeremy didn't know much about the Drake curse, but let me tell you guys, Drake curse is real. Everyone who has had Drake bet on their team or support their team, ask Kentucky fans how they feel about the Drake curse. They know it's real because they went home after one day. So and then Houston almost loses in the second round. Maybe this is the time that we engineer the Drake curse. So everybody, I don't know, play a Drake song tomorrow on Friday. And maybe that'll help as we get to Dallas. But again, it's going to be a great, great game. Jason, you get the final word before we wrap up.
All right. Las Vegas says Houston Cougars by 3.5. Ken Pomeroy says Houston by 3, 69-66. Donald, you got a prediction on this game?
Buzzer beater. Jeremy Cain 3. We win by 1.
I'll take that. I'd like that. Yeah, in my head, I think the reason I think Duke wins this game, and I actually think it may be a little more than a buzzer beater. I think Duke wins this game because I feel like if you look at what each of these teams has been doing lately, as in the past couple games of the NCAA tournament, I think you saw focus from Duke that you haven't seen in the past. And I think an extra 5 days, I think being an underdog, how many times this year is Duke? I think Duke's only been an underdog like once this year. The game at Carolina, I believe, was the only other game where an underdog. I think this Duke team, and I think these guys recognize that their time is short and that it's time to leave everything out there on the floor. I like Duke in this game. I like him a lot. I like him more than you might be surprised by how much I like Duke in this game.
I love the confidence. I think I share that confidence with you, Jason. There's a lot of things that are going to have to happen tomorrow night. There's going to be a lot of blood, a lot of sweat, a lot of tears that have been put into this. All of those practices that go all the way back to the, you know, first part of June of last year when they were getting together as a team. Flip and Mitchell, when they were recovering from their injuries, still being on the court, getting better every single day, all leads to these moments, right? When we look at one shining moment, we don't get a lot of Duke ones unless we win the national championship. Let's have a one shining moment tomorrow against Houston. It's going to take a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, passion. And Jason, that little ticker that we have right here beating between our chests, a lot of heart. If we have heart in this game, we have the focus. I feel confident that our Blue Devils can get it done. That will do it for episode 617 of the Duke Basketball Roundup. Thank you, as always, for listening. We will be back at some point after the game on Friday night. It may not be Friday night because that's a very late one. 9:39 estimated start time on the East Coast on CBS. So get your naps in on Friday if you need to. Get your coffee, get your late night coffee, because we're going to be up a while. We'll be back at some point this weekend to hopefully preview a next one, but we're going to have to get past Houston first. Good luck to the Duke Blue Devils. Good luck to the Duke women's team this weekend as well as they go in the Sweet 16. We're really looking forward to watching both of our teams in action.
Playing UConn. They're playing UConn.
playing UConn as we just like we drew it up, Jason, on the last episode. But good luck to them. I know I'm going to be watching, and hopefully all of you out there as well. Again, after the game, headlines, dbrpodcast@gmail.com. But until then, for Jason Evans, I am Donald Wine. This is the Duke Basketball Roundup, and now it is time for the Duke Band to play us out and take us on. Go Duke!